Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to have on with us today Andy Williams, Jr., presidential candidate. I want to let everyone know that a lot of times people think, unless you're some kind of high-profile person, that you can run for the presidential candidate. I remember hearing and meeting a lawyer one time at an NA meeting when I took a client for a meeting. He had been sober for 12 years, so he was speaking. He was a lawyer who became an alcoholic. He was very intelligent, but his problem was so severe that he ended up losing his law practice. He lost his family. He lost everything simply because he had an alcohol problem. A lot of times professionals are so into the lunches and all the things that come with being a high-profile person that he became an alcoholic. I always said that this person, if he had run for the presidential campaign, he probably would win. We as citizens of the United States are always, always talking about the problems we have in this country and changes that need to be made. If somebody is running for the presidential candidate as a presidential candidate, and they're not in a high-profile position, a lot of people will look down on that person. But we have someone that's running for the presidential candidate campaign, and he's going to speak tonight about his thoughts, his theory, his philosophical theories, his experiences, and things that made him decide he's going to run for the presidential candidate. Now, I want the audience to listen closely, because this person, as young as he may be, is very, very intelligent, knows the issues because he's experienced a lot of what we as average citizens and even some that are in lower positions because of the environment they grew up in. This person is going to talk about what his plans are as president of the United States of America. And again, I'm going to say, no one can ever make a comment about somebody that is not in a high position that decides because of their intelligence and their experiences that they can run for such a position. We need changes in America. And this presidential candidate is going to go for We the People Party, not the Democrats, not the Republicans, but We the People Party. And he's going to talk about his own thoughts, his own ideas, his own goals, and his own achievements and struggles. So let's welcome our guest, Andy Williams, Jr., presidential campaign candidate. Thank you so much for being on with us, Andy Williams, Jr. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself before we get started? And can you hear me? Oh, I have him on. I'm sorry. I had you on mute. Okay, can you hear me? Yes, very clearly. Thank you so much for coming on, Andy. I want you to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and also, you had mentioned previously about the Declaration of Independence, so I would like to have you speak on that because we have some questions for you tonight, and we are going to be asking these questions and having you answer them at the same time. So if you can introduce yourself.
My name is Andy Williams, Jr., Hope, Andy Hope Williams, Jr., because I bring the hope to the world. I was born in Aurora, Illinois. My parents separated when I was two. My father remarried to a German lady, which we would mostly identify her as white. I had a good upbringing with a two-parent household. When she and my father split when I was 12, I got involved in gangs, wound up going to jail numerous times, eventually led me to the Department of Corrections. Once I got out of the Department of Corrections, I started selling drugs and went right back to jail literally 3 months later. And I got a law library pass, and I studied for about 7 months and beat the drug case in a bench trial. Once I got out there, I came back to the community, and I started selling drugs. Then eventually I stopped because I was what we know as gangs, and there was a new manifesto, a new blueprint from Gangster Disciple to Growth and Development. And then I took on that blueprint, and I started changing my life. Self-evolving, became a ordained deacon, got married, bought a house, three children, owned a mortgage company, got caught up in the mortgage foreclosure crisis for about 13 years, joined the NAACP from there. And then I wind up going to Elmhurst. I went to Lewis University College to get a bachelor's degree in paralegal studies because I was fighting this foreclosure case. And that foreclosure case wind up being part of the reason me and my first wife split up, got a divorce. I met my second wife at Elmhurst because the teacher from Lewis University was a lawyer, but he also was a teacher. Then he hired me, and I went to go work at his law firm and met my wife, my current wife there. And then about February 2019, there was a mass shooting in Aurora, and the shooter was my friend. And I wind up going to the company with Henry Pratt because some of the people there had a card for his mother because they knew the kid. The brother, Gary Martin, that's his name. He's a good kid. Good brother. He snapped one day. He was tired of all the systemic oppression that was happening with him. So I did the eulogy at his funeral. And then just from my whole life, from leading up from a child 2 years old up to 2019, I felt I had a calling. You know, what I would say is the Holy Spirit reached out to me and asked me if I would run for president. And I was like, okay. Talked to my wife about it. She prayed about it. And that was the first time I ran for president in the 2020 election. Then after I secured about 17 votes, that's what I know for sure. I was a write-in candidate. I kept on that trail, though. I kept on believing that I could, you know, I had a bigger calling to make a difference. And I wind up suing the United States and 31 other states for the ongoing role of slavery. I said, you know, the prison labor, it's just legalized slavery. And then from there, I started getting into it with the police, not getting into it physical, but unlawful, discriminatory traffic stops, involved in litigation with them, got involved with some fair housing claims for some discrimination with them from my own apartment I was, you know, renting. And then came around this time, July this year, in fact, it was June, something said, you know what, I need to get back into this race. You know, the candidates that are out here, they really don't have a vision for the people, primarily because they're too old. And I think that's really just my main standpoint. You out of touch. You know, you got people running that 70 years old, and then you got people that's, you know, 21, 18, eligible to vote. That's like 50, close to 60 years of an age gap. And that's, you're just out of touch. And I feel I'm part of the Joshua generation, so I honor the generation that went before me. I would say the Moses generation, but also the generation that's coming up, you know, the millennials and the Gen Zs. And that's, you know, a short version of my story in 5 minutes. And, you know, it's power packed. But that's where I'm at. And I feel like our generation can lead this nation, because our generation has so much experience of overcoming different things, and we're able to use the technology and do research. And for me, it's always both sides. You know, if we say, you know, there's white supremacy, I'm going to say, you know what, well, there was white abolitionists. You know, if people say there's hate, I'm going to say, well, there's also love. So I'm always going to counter it with the positive thing that's going on, because as a believer, we have the power of life and death in our tongue. And we keep speaking about all the evil and the ills, and that's what we see. We're creating that. But if we begin to speak about what we want to see or the positive that we see, then we would change this nation. And so with that being said, the campaign I have is a vision for America called a new government. And that's a campaign, and it's taken directly out of the Declaration of Independence in the preamble, when it talks about we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. It says men, but I like to say all people are created equal. And they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And right there, just talking about the unalienable rights, means these, my rights, you can't put a lien on them. So whatever my rights are, they're mine, given to me by birth, by my creator. You can't put a lien against them. And some of those rights is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But in order to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And where does the government get their power? From the consent of the governed. However, we come to a point now where the Declaration of Independence says that when any form of government becomes destructive, it is the right of the people to alter, abolish it, and institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as they, as to them, shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And for me, I leave it right there because we are at that time that the government has become destructive from all areas. There's no morals, values, and principles. But is it really the government or is it people? And it's people that's representing a false sense of government. Because what I look at as this, and I'm talking about Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, whatever labels that you have, they're the ones that's responsible for not holding each other accountable. They're the ones that are responsible in these by taking these jobs and not understanding that they're representatives of the people. It's more representatives of their political party. And I have come to the conclusion that we need a new government, a government by the people, for the people, because we are the people. We all are the people. So if you remove the label, we are the people. And we have to have a spirit of love thy neighbor, respect thy neighbor. I don't have to agree with my neighbor, what they do, what their lifestyle or their choices are. But as me as a believer, the scripture specifically tells me, pray for your enemies. Do good to those that do bad to you. It doesn't mean you got to let somebody do bad to you. So it's not like, oh, you get to, you know, infringe upon my unalienable rights and there's no remedy. Because even the scriptures say the Lord disciplines those who he loves. And so we need to have a candidate or more wisely spoken, an applicant, because we're applying for a position in Congress that gives us a job description. And that's what Andy Williams Jr. brings to the table. I bring that saying, listen, I will teach the people about how to hold the elected officials or representatives accountable to their job description.
Thank you, Andy. And, you know, I'm glad you are open about your experiences in life, because a lot of times we see these politicians, these legislative members who run for the candidacy, keeping so much from the public. They hide everything until they start having these debates and all their dirt comes out. You are upfront with what your experiences were, which is also a good sign as a presidential candidate. We also look at people in politics that always have to look at a piece of paper when they make their speeches, because they really don't know what they're talking about. And they can't talk or have a speech without paper in front of them. When someone is talking and having a speech or talking about anything, when they don't have that piece of paper in front of them, then we know that these people know what they're talking about. So I thank you for that. And again, I wanted to let you know that the Declaration of Independence, and I asked you to speak on that because in the United States of America, the citizens, many of them don't even know what the Declaration of Independence is all about. This country was built on immigrants, and a lot of people coming over now, immigrants, have to have that same information. They have to be able to speak about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. So these people have more knowledge of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence than our own citizens of this country. So that's why I wanted you to speak a little bit about that. And then I'd like to get on with some questions for you.
I'm ready.
Okay. Thank you so much again. Okay, my first question to you, Andy, is, and let me just pull it up because, okay. My first question to you is the, and I just turned the computer on shortly before the radio show started, the founding principles. Now, how do you interpret the core principles outlined in the Declaration of Independence, and how do you plan to incorporate them into the new government?
So one of the, I look at them as that the people are sovereign. You know, we the people have these unalienable rights, and we're the ones that are sovereign. So in order to incorporate those, there's got to be a major teaching, but it's being taught by how we represent each other. Like, we have to represent that belief system about the government, what it stands for. And again, just understanding the Declaration of Independence and its history, those people were trying to escape Great Britain and the tyranny that was going over there with a king, as they would say, taxation without representation. So they were escaping that. But the spirit and the damage that had been done to them, they came straight over here on land that was already occupied, and now you're seeing the fruit of that. It was going on back then, enslaving people, controlling people, and that's what they kept doing. And now, because there's been no accountability, it's then become this big old oak tree problem. So what I am able to do to share, especially coming from my background and my generation, on how I can align the scriptures along with the Declaration of Independence and say this new government is a kingdom on earth. This new government is the new Jerusalem. And so incorporating it in, one, we are the people. We're teaching that right now. Everybody's learning that process, what's going on. And it's not just you just join us and then you already automatically join us and we want you. No, there's a teaching process that goes through, an education. You know, what they don't teach civics in school no more. And there's a group called Tactical Civics. I think his name is David Zuniga. He teaches Monday through Friday what his organization does. So we also align with that and say, listen, you can learn what civics are. You can learn this government. And then there's a lady, Chris Ann Hall, and other people, too. I just mentioned these because I like the information that they share. So in order to incorporate that into this new government, we have to teach that. And we got to bring civics not only into the schools, but into our households, into our congregations. And that's something that we'll be able to do.
Okay. And as far as representation and consent, how do you envision ensuring that the new government is founded on the consent of the governed, as stated in the Declaration of Independence?
Well, one, we teach about a republic form of government. And what happens is when the history of the Pledge of Allegiance says, I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, and that key word, and to the republic. So what is a republic form of government? That's a limited form of government where the people are sovereign. Because what I believe, historically, the role of the government was is to correct whenever there's something that needs to be corrected, if the people can't handle it, like the wisdom of Solomon. You know, for those that are familiar with the scriptures, Solomon listened to both sides and then came up with a solution. You know, it just wasn't one-sided. And this new legislative government is just one-sided. You did this and you're guilty. So I believe we get to correct with a form of wisdom. And then there's also to direct. The role of government would be able to direct to the resources. And I'm under the mindset that there's a solution to every problem that exists. It's already here. We're just not aware of it. And that's what comes down with the experience. When you have historically what we know as Caucasians or Anglo-Saxons running the government, you don't have experience with the inner city. You don't have experience with the cultures. You know, really, we could just really stop there and say it's a different culture. So you would have to direct resources to the cultures. And if I've been indoctrinated to say, you know, this way is the only way, it's the right way, well, I would not be able to direct you to resources, because the only resources that I'm aware of is the ones that I had access to. And in order to have access to those resources, you had to have financial resources, what knocks you out the box of being, you know, in a marginalized or living below the poverty line level. So it takes somebody with experience to be able to direct those resources. And then there's the correction part. And I believe the main correction today, like our focus, has to be on those that take these oaths, so judicial and prosecutorial misconduct. And believe it or not, there's several other groups, people, that we would not normally believe feel that the government is also out of control. They're also tyrannical. And so when we're saying, you know, we want to correct these problems, we realize we have to do that together as people. So what we're saying is, you know, with our government to protect the rights of the people, is we're going to teach people about their rights, teach people about those remedies, and show you what a limited role of government is. Because the government should not be involved in nobody's private business, private affairs, unless their private affairs is injuring another people or their property. So we're going to do away with that. And it's not something that I can do away with. It's something that we, the people, can do away with that.
Thank you, Andy. You know, one of the things I find, though, in this country is, again, there's a lot of people who complain about the problems that we have in this country, but a lot of people don't take a stand. They're looking for a strong leader, I believe, to lead them. And this is the problem we have in this country, because, as you mentioned, only we, the people, can resolve all the serious issues that are going on in this country. We, the people, have to come together. And I like your philosophy on all of this and your goal to try to bring this about. And I'm hoping that people in this country that really want to see change will look at it this way, because I am sure tired of turning the television on every day only to hear about the division between the two parties, only to hear about the one president, former president, trying to stay out of prison and another one trying to keep his son out of prison. I'm tired of hearing about these wars overseas when we have a country of our own that we have to repair. And this country is not being repaired because everything is going across the pond. So these are some of the things I'm really interested in. Now, I wanted to ask on equality and on unavailability rights, in what ways will your government, we the people, prioritize and protect the unalienable rights of all individuals, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? How would you be addressing these issues as well?
So, again, one of the ways to address the issues is to teach people about their rights, to teach people about the role of government. Because, again, government, as I stated in the and previously in the Declaration of Independence, the government has become destructive. So I cannot put myself in the same position as a destructive government trying to force people to follow an ideology like that. You can't do that. I mean, I'm not willing to do that. So I feel like it's got to come down with education. It's got to teach people about their rights. And today, you know, in Plains, Georgia, Rosalynn Carter, Jimmy Carter's wife, she, you know, her service was today. She transitioned, I believe, was on November 19th. That is what a government would look like when you have people that care about people. That legacy that they leave, that she has left behind, and the, you know, in their 90s, working for Habitat for Humanity, true servanthood. That's what it is. So I can't sit here and say, you know what, hey, I can actually protect the people's rights totally. What I can do is teach people about their rights, teach people about the Bill of Rights, the right to bear arms, the right. Not that everybody has to bear arms, but when you're teaching your rights here, and then we have the social services, we have the churches, we have the religious institutions all saying, you know what do we have in common? And I always say is we are the people. We're the people. We have the ability to abolish the hate that's within us. And Michael Jackson, I always love to point to this song. He said, I got to start with that man in the mirror. I got to ask that one to make that change. The Bible says, before you try to take the plank out of your neighbor's eye, the speck out of your neighbor's eye, remove the plank out of your eye. All that deals with people having the power to change within. But if you don't see that, then you don't know how to adapt that. And it's in our homes. It's in our schools. You could just look at what it's a mad, mad world. But it's not the majority. It's what we keep seeing. The crimes and all this stuff, literally that's the minority. It's way more positive, good things going on, and what we need to do is represent that. So what I would do to protect and ensure the inalienable rights of all people is to teach them about their inalienable rights. To share with them and say, hey, listen, we have these classes and Zoom and workshops with our We Are the People family. You can learn on these days. This is what we're teaching. This is what we're doing. And we're taking care of our neighbors, you know. And I love the story of the Good Samaritan. The one least likely to help the robber on the road is not how it always is going now. It's always, you know, it's the one least likely is the one that's doing it, and the ones that are called to do it are not doing it. So we got to make that change.
Yes. That's so true. There's so many things that need to be done. There's so many things that we need to look at. You know, a lot of these things we're talking about is really education, which is good. We also have to remember, though, that, you know, there are major issues that need to be addressed, such as housing and things like that. But as far as the teaching, it's very much needed in this country. Now, government accountability. I really like to talk about this because there doesn't seem to be accountability anywhere. There's no accountability in the communities with our government. There's no accountability in the prison system, the Department of Corrections, all of these things going on. There's no accountability in a lot of these organizations that are supposed to be nonprofits or whatever. So it's good that you're talking about some of these things. And I'd like to know more about your thoughts on government accountability. How do you plan to establish a system of government that is accountable to the people as expressed in the Declaration's assertion that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed?
So there's some court opinions, and one of them, it was back in 1940, and it talked about public officers are merely agents of the public whose powers and authority are defined and limited by law. You know, and then there's another one that public officers only possess such authority as conferred upon them by law, and they have to do it by law. But whenever these officers act wholly outside of the scope of their powers, they're considered unauthorized. And when you misapply that power, there's an accountability. And previous days, whenever a judge or a prosecutor or somebody violated their oath, that was treason. And they warred against the Constitution, and the punishment was death. That's what it was. That's exactly what it was. So while we're, as a society, saying, you know what, if you kill somebody, you're going to get the death penalty, well, those that were in these positions making the decisions about people's life, they had to ensure that their rights are being protected. And if they made, you know, they messed up and took it into their personal, you know, like instead of me following the Constitution, which protects the people's rights and their property. The Constitution puts a limit on government. But when that government does not hold those public officials, which are our servants, accountable, well, you see what we have right now. You see it. And what we're doing is saying, number A, and I use this in the Trump terms, you're fired. So that's the first thing. We don't allow you to get 2, 3, 4, 5 infractions because that has become such a huge issue right now with the lack of accountability. And Ms. Leona, I talk about my own experience. I've been fighting a traffic ticket for 4 years, 3 months. The police officers lied on the stand. They lied about the stop. I've been through 4 different judges. well, really they're hearing officers. They're not even judges, because judges rule with a matter of law. Legislation is under the color of law, so it's not even law. And we've been deceived and duped again with some trickery stuff. So these administrative hearing officers violated my rights. And then when you write them up to the ARDC or the Judicial Inquiry Board, they find nothing wrong. When you go to the courts turn a blind eye and say, well, they're wearing a robe, then they're a judge. And that's what this lady Sharon Coleman out of the Northern District, she said, when this dude, James McCluskey, I'm going to trial, he cross-examined the leasing agent. The judge cross-examined the leasing agent and said foundation laid. That's a denial of due process. And then if I go to the federal court, because this happened in state court, and then she says, well, he's got a robe on, then he's acting in his official capacity, how do we get a remedy? And so what I'm coming back saying is we're not going to negotiate that with that no more. I could care less who's been appointed to do what. If your appointment has got you confused about your position, then you need to pick up a new career. Retire with some dignity if you can, because this is not a government that is serving the people. This is a government that in several instances are serving their own self. And I'm not saying everyone is like that, because I talk about Trump because I study a lot of the stuff that goes around with him. And when there was a case that the NAACP filed a suit against Trump for violation of the Ku Klux Klan Act, and the District of Columbia judicial officer, which this lady was a judge, I don't remember exactly what the name of the case is, but whatever. But what she held is that you can have an emotional injury and you stated a claim. An emotional injury. So while we're stepping in here going to court expecting it's going to be one or two and done, and it's going on for 2-3 years, that's an emotional injury. Who wants to go to court 7, 8, 9 times a year saying my rights have been violated and they turn a blind eye? I have another brother right now from Trinidad in DuPage County. The court don't have jurisdiction. The city created an ordinance that violates the statute of the Illinois General Assembly because he was allegedly driving without a license. The city, the village can't create an ordinance like that because the state of Illinois already has one. Then you got this Camacho case that came out of Will County that said if that ordinance comes like that, if a city does an ordinance, they lack jurisdiction. I attached it to his case to help him out. He's still lost. So how does this keep going? And I'm saying we the people have the power. And one of the things we can do to hold them accountable is we the people have the power to panel our own grand jury. And that's a right that's guaranteed to us, that's protected by the Constitution. And so when we start teaching the people about jury nullification, we start teaching people about the right to panel their own grand jury, teaching the people how the militia protect their identity. It's not the prosecutor that brings the charges. It's not the judge. They're out the way because we have to bring charges against them. And that's what I'm saying we're going to do, and you don't have to elect me to do that. We're doing it now. We're doing it now. You know, and one more little thing I want to say. Let me find this case. It says, no man in this country is so high that he is above the law. No officer of the law may set the law at defiance with impunity. All the officers of the government, from the highest to the lowest, are creatures of the law and are bound to obey it. It is the only supreme power in our system of government, and every man, by accepting office, participates in its function, is only the more strongly bound to submit to that supremacy, not white supremacy, the supremacy of the law, and observe the limitations which is imposed upon the exercise of the authority which it gives. That part right there says no man or woman in this country is so high above the law. Whether you Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Kim DiGiovanni, Luke Kowar, Sharon Coleman, I can go down the list, and every name that I'm telling you is somebody that I've dealt with personally. So I'm not going off of some hearsay. I represent my own self in these cases, and I'm fortunate enough because that's how I learn. So I'm not talking about somebody else's situation without me knowing firsthand what happened. So you can't call it a hearsay for me. You can't tell me what my experience was because I'm telling you what it was. And even with that, I don't have a hate against these people. I don't. What I have a hate against is the injustice and the lack of accountability. So I'm the little brother that's rising up saying, you know what? I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do something.
Thank you. Now, social contract and the rule of law. How would your government or will your government uphold the social contract and the rule of law, ensuring that both leaders and people are bound by a set of fair and just principles?
We will do that 100% in the sense of teaching people about their rights. And when we talk about the contract and the rule of the law, we have to understand that the legislation that's being passed is not law. That's the first thing. And so taxes, people just don't comprehend this. But taxes are voluntary, okay? And it's countless court opinions that state this. But if I share with somebody, hey, you know, taxes are voluntary, and they don't believe that, then they're going to continue to pay those taxes. If we go to court and I tell the, you know, the judicial officer, hey, these taxes are unlawful, here's this court opinion, but they believe they're lawful because they're paying, or maybe they're not, I don't really know. So we don't get to do justice just for us. And so when there's a court opinion that comes from the Supreme Court, those opinions should be followed. They should be followed. But what happens when you have a corrupt Supreme Court? We the people have to do it. So when I say we're going to establish the social contract and the rule of law with the people, I'm helping people understand the law of the land is do your neighbor no harm. That's the law of the land. That's what we're going to. So I got to teach what we do. And it's not just me. That's why I say we are the people. That's our family. It's our membership association. We are the people who have the power, and we can teach each other about our rights, and we can say this is what the law is. If you don't agree with this statute, this ordinance, then go, let's take it to a jury trial, and then we do jury nullification that says even though your statute or ordinance says this, we're not going with it. And the reason why the jury would do that, because if you don't, you'll find yourself on the other side, sitting up there, hoping that the jury does a jury nullification for you. Because they drag us into these courts for anything they can because it's legalized slavery. And the reason why I say taxes are unlawful, because how do you have to go to work? No, go to work and pay somebody. You got to pay the government while you're working. Why do I got to go to work and pay the government? Why can't I go to work and keep my own profit? Why can't I? We're not asking. I mean, when you limit that, then now it puts the power back into the people's hands to open up their own schooling with some of these churches in the community, like Florida. They said, we're going to teach critical race theory. So they start teaching in their churches. That's what you should have did in the first place. Because the role of government is not to solve your problem, not to come up with every solution. Because we've empowered these people, too. So in defense of those that are elected, we keep crying to them, asking for them to fix it, and they don't have experience. So they can't fix it. And up to now, where I'm saying, I'm always bringing it back to the people. We have the power to come up with a solution. It's not just left up to those that we choose to represent us. We got to take some responsibility and accountability. Because if not, what do you see right now? The government is ruling our children, telling us what our children can and cannot do. Not only our children, I had my father two Saturdays ago, a week ago, police said, can we search your car? He said, no. They said, get out your car. Roughed my pops up, took him to jail for resisting arrest. But there was nothing lawful that he was doing. There was nothing unlawful. He told you no, and you got pissed off.
Yeah, that is a major problem in this country with all races, you know, police brutality and the disrespect that police provide. You know, they want respect from the people in the communities, and yet they don't want to give respect. And this is a major issue in this country because it's becoming like a controlled country, and no one challenges any of these individuals in uniform. And because of that, that's why things get worse, and that's why they take more control over what they're doing. Even our legislative members are too afraid, I guess, to challenge them, or just don't care. I don't know, but they need to. There needs to be some challenges behind it all.
Well, we do challenge them, and I'm one of the ones that challenge them. What happens is they're not held accountable.
That's it.
That's what it is.
That's it.
I do challenge them 100%. I listen. And the thing about it is when Andy challenges them, he doesn't hate them. And that's what confuses them. Whenever you on your job and you treat me bad, good. I ain't going to treat you bad back, but I'm not going to bow down and say, yes, master. Like, I'm not doing that. We forget that. But when you off your job and I see you in the store or the restaurant or something, I'm not coming up to you saying, you remember when you did this? I won't speak, or if I speak, it'll be like some kind. Because that's the only way we would change society and the hearts of people if we treated them the way we want to be treated, not the way we've been treated. And that takes a level of maturity. And trust me to the listeners, I didn't wake up being born like this. I can assure you that. I done got all kinds of trouble. The domestic issues in my own past of not understanding how to control my temper because I didn't grow up being modeled around that. Being in the gang and everything that you do is surrounded by violence. And then you think you're going to get married into a home, and then you got two people with different backgrounds and you disagreeing. Well, we handle it the way we know how to handle it. Well, we're going to get into an argument. We're going to get into a fight. And that's why I share, when you're looking at these police officers that's doing these shootings and people in the back and their tempers is just going from 1 to 100 right away, you might want to go check out their home and see how their spouses are being done and their kids is being done. And I'm not saying every scenario that there's some trauma there, but I'm telling you more than likely it is because we have a lack of self-control. We do. And it's something that you can learn. And so when you say, well, how did you learn? I say prayer and fasting. But then there's there's an organization called the Men Project that does this. I voluntarily went to domestic classes with the state's attorney in DuPage County. I voluntarily went. They didn't make me go nowhere. I chose to because I recognized I needed to better myself. And that's the power we have as people. And that's what I represent. I'm not blaming the Democrats. I'm not blaming the Republicans. I'm not blaming no ancestors. I ain't blaming nobody. I'm saying we're going to learn from history, and we're going to try not to repeat it unless it's good. And that's some good wisdom. In fact, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm happy myself that I can say that with a straight face and mean it.
Well, you know, you mentioned respect. And the individuals that I've been interviewing from across the pond, from the Netherlands, Amsterdam, Germany, one of the things that I find that they have said so many times is that when you treat people with respect, you get respect back. And those people, even the warden, 27-year warden, said the same thing. When he was running his prisons, he treated the prisoners with respect. And that's what he got back. He got respect back. We live in a country where everybody thinks, well, not everybody, but we live in a country where a lot of people think that they are owed something, you know, because they're in high positions or they wear uniforms or have titles, that they are owed something. But as I mentioned in the beginning of this show, sometimes someone that's beyond or below, as they may call it, below them, as usually so many people are very much intelligent. They just don't choose to run for those positions, or they have issues, as we all do in this country, of mental illnesses, of addictions, of, you know, poverty or whatever the case may be. But sometimes you find some of the most intelligent people in the streets, in the homeless shelters, in the prisons, because these people have stumbled because of all the work that they've done in their lifetime, using their education or their knowledge, and because they have a passion to help others. in our government right now, we have a government that's about the government, and they use the people as a scapegoat, as their means to justify their means of wars and everything else that takes place around the country. So what you're saying is basically the same as those across the other, in other countries say, give respect, you earn respect, and that's the way it is. But I wanted to go on. I wanted to go on to Andy about the separation of powers. What? How do you propose structuring the government to prevent the concentration of power? You know, in line with the idea of the separate of powers articulated in the Declaration.
You know, there's three branches of government: executive, legislative, and the and judicial. And each one is supposed to balance each other for checks and balances, you know. And one of the ways I feel like is, you know, with the judicial branch was supposed to be the neutral branch to ensure that, you know, the people's rights are not being infringed and you don't pass no legislation that infringes upon the people's constitutionally protected rights. Is one of the things, you don't have a party affiliation by being an elected person. Like, I don't care who you hang out with. That doesn't bother me. But you have to run as the man or the woman to be elected. And in my county, DuPage County, I was at a statewide Republican meeting two, 3 weeks ago. The sheriff was there. The state's attorney was there. All the people that's running for, you know, county board and stuff was there. And there's an appellate court. State court judge running for the appellate court. And he came up and spoke to me afterwards. You know, I was a visitor there. First time me going to that. And what I heard in that room was, we got to stack the deck. That's what I heard. We got to make sure we put us on these appellate court decisions to ensure what we're saying, what we believe is accurate. They said, you know, we got to do this at the border, and all these criminals coming over, which the Bible tells me they're foreigners. They're criminals. Now, there could be some foreigners that are committed some criminal acts that's trying to come over here and hide or get away from that. That's different. But just hearing that, just hearing it, it's like, this is what we're dealing with. So what I feel that we have to do is, A, get away from electing people from your party that aligns with your ideology. What we need is people that align with their job description. And so when you violate your oath, whether you be Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever it is, there's swift accountability that happens there. You got DuPage County judges that get caught with DUI, leaving and fleeing the scene, and then they spend no time in jail, and they're still on the bench. What message does that send? That if you want to get away with crime, be a police officer or be a judge or be part of that good old, that's all parties, you know, although some parties will turn their back on you, though. And they did it with LaShawn Ford, the Democrats, and he's still a Democrat. They did it with Bernie Sanders, you know. So I ain't saying that, you know, you don't have divisions going on within your own, but we gotta get rid of that. So, you know, what we do is listen and uphold to that separation of powers and ensure each function is doing, I mean, each role of government is doing its job description, so we can have a society by the people, for the people, because we are the people.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I want to also bring up the diversity and inclusion. How will your government promote diversity and inclusion to reflect the, you know, the pluralistic society that exists, ensuring that all voices are heard and represented? Because we have a government now, our legislative members, that when constituents contact them for help, they will make calls or maybe even write letters. But when they can't resolve the issue, rather than to challenge the people that they're going to advocate for their constituent, they actually ignore the constituent. They stop communicating with the constituent that's asking for the help. So
So how would you include diversity and in inclusion into the your government, or we the people?
What we do right now, we are the people. We have that culture represented. So if there's no way that I could represent or I could relate, because I can represent people, you know, but just on basic common morals, values, and principles. That's standard across the board. Do unto others you would have others do unto you. But when it comes to some cultural situation, because one person may want to take holistic wellness, and they call the government, you know, one of the agencies, and they're looking for the resource. Because, again, I said earlier, part of the role of government is to direct you to the resources. If I don't have a culture background, then I need to call somebody from that culture to say, how do we handle this, because I lack experience. That's how we would handle it. If you have a diverse cabinet, a diverse role of government, and I'm not the one to say, oh, we got a black person in the Supreme Court. Although I do believe from the decisions that I'm hearing, or I mean I'm reading, I think Ms. Jackson and Sotomayor, those positions, it's the majority of the rulings that the majority of the opinions that I've read, that does matter. And it matters because they see it from a different lens. However, it's not the majority rule. That's what the democracy is. If these are what our rights are, and the government should not be infringing upon that. Because the majority of these court opinions that we're hearing all deal with the rights of the people. And what we're doing is we're perpetuating legalized slavery. Anytime you grant, which I said earlier about every man is or woman is subject to the same set of laws or rules, what we're doing is creating legalized slavery, turning a blind eye. And so now it just keeps going on and on and on and on. So what we have to do is say, no, here's our rights, and we know what our rights are, and I get to put a cabinet together that represents the people, all people, not just the people that are, oh, you got the same skin color as me, so, hey, come on, I want to bring all my homies and buddies. Nah, that's the problem we got right now. I'm not afraid to learn from some strangers. I'm not. And see, that's what I feel like brings it different. I don't want to be arguing about things that have no bearing to life. You know, whatever you believe is your belief, as long as your belief doesn't cause you to hate me, cause you to harm me. You have every right to believe that. What does that bother me? Nothing. And so when we mind our own business, in the sense of as long as you're not hurting nobody or infringing upon somebody's rights or doing something to harm children, widows, orphans, the elderly, we got to protect those people. But if you're doing something against that, then I believe every part of the government should step in and protect those people. And one last thing I'll say is back in the 1800s, they had those beacons of defense and the freedom bureaus, and, you know, they had their own militias and stuff. It wasn't about the government. It was about the people. It was about the people.
So, again, how would you ensure that that all voices are heard and represented?
Because our voices would be invited to the input. But one of the things that I want us to be clear on is the role of government is very limited. It's always been limited. Even from the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Franklin, Madison, Monroe, well, there's some hypocritical stuff with them. There's no perfect man or woman. But it was always the role of limited government, limited, you know. That's what we got to get back to, because the government in its position with these titles and these labels and these people have become too powerful. That's what happened in the 2008 foreclosure crisis, the meltdown. The banks was too big to fail. So instead of bailing the people out, which makes sense, you bail the banks out and they continue to do what they're doing. I would rather owe nobody nothing than for you to give the bail out the banks, and all they do is keep putting people in debt. But the billions of dollars that was spent to bail them banks out, we could have stabilized their economy just by getting people out of debt, forgiving the mortgages, keeping the houses.
So that brings me to my next question. What role do you see the government playing in the lives of individuals? And how will you balance the need for governance with the protection of individual freedoms?
I see the role of government as being friends with the people. You know, like Mr. Rogers. Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to my neighborhood. The role of government should be knowing the neighbors. Because who is the government? Who really is the government? That judge sitting up there as a government? Well, don't he go to somebody's church? Don't he got some kids in the school? That's a neighbor. Don't the sheriff got neighbors? See, we got to stop putting this pit of it's us against them and then just leave it like, yo, these are people, these are our neighbors. And what we have to do is make sure that they know they people, just like we're people, and they don't have no power over us. And whenever they infringe upon our inalienable rights, which is our freedom that's given to us by our birth, we 100% have the right to hold them accountable. And I'm going back to what Lil DT say, you're fired. Whenever the role of government, any elected official, representative, infringes upon the rights of the people, we got to fire them. We got to, because we have to set that example. We have to set that deterrent so we can get this economy stabilized, which I'd love to say would happen in 8 years. And in fact, if it was to happen in 8 years, it would mean that this generation that's 25, which that's how old you have to be to run for Congress, we'd have to start getting them, you know, at the age of 20, you know, 19, recruiting them, teaching them the right way so they don't become contaminated. Yeah.
That sounds good. In what ways will your government address the issues of social justice and ensure the welfare of all people consistent with the principles of the Declaration?
I think social justice is one of the ways we address it is working with other entities, other organizations, non-government organizations, NGOs, religious or spiritual organizations, and we would all come together. So it wouldn't be like just the government. It'd be we the people are doing it. We the people, you know. And when we talk about being consistent with the principles of the Declaration of Independence, it says we the people. You know, in order to form a more perfect union. We would have to do that. And what's the more perfect union is us people working together to come up with a solution. And it's no one, like Kanye West said, no one man should have all that power. That's where the cabinet comes in. So it's like you have these different people saying, you know what, I got experience with that. And right now, we're coming up to that 5:30 mark, so we might want to close with this one and then come back next week for the other and just build from that if that's okay. But what it is that when we look at we the people of our generation having experience coming in with the social problems that's happening today, which we know it deals with the foreigners, it deals with prison, it deals with unfair taxation without representation, it deals with crime. So how do you reduce crime? First, let's find out what crime is. And crime has to be something against people or their property. The other stuff is not crime. It's legislative acts, which the states lack standing. So right there, you've reduced the prison population. But then you also need something for them. And so that's where the vocational training comes in. Everybody's created for a purpose. What we want to do is help people discover that purpose. What dream did you have? I mean, you got people that don't have no hope. They have no hope. So what we have to do as representatives, instill that hope. And we can learn a lot from these little children who are not indoctrinated, who are not and been contaminated with our views. And what we do is spend time with them because, in closing, I'll say this. If you put a whole bunch of little kids in the nursing home to talk to the elders in there, put some nice colors in there, some good music, it will prolong the lives of those people because their spirit will come back alive. There's no hope. We don't have no hope.
Well, thank you, Andy. And we're going to pick up on this next week. I really wanted to go more into the international relationship that we've spoken of before, the international relations and people participation and adaptability and progress. And we can do work on this next week. In the meantime, I'd like to have you give the audience your contact information, how they can help, either volunteering, donate, contributing, however it might be, if you can let the audience know that. I truly appreciate you coming on. And again, I hope the audience will learn something from this. I think that we in this country have forgotten that we are the people and that we are the government. And we've allowed a handful of men and women in this country to try to run the country. They're either not leaders or they're not doing their job right, because we would not be in this desperate situation that we're in now. So we can pick up on it next week. But in the meantime, if you can give the audience your information and how they can help, volunteering, monetary, however it might be. Thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My website is www.awj2024.com. And if you just want to email me there, it's a donation. You know, please make a donation today. Any amount would do. We're trying to revamp our website to put up some videos and some more information. So please, you know, send that, or the mailing address is there. You can send a check. And you also can send a letter, too. Just say, hi, hey, think about this. You know, share your ideas with me. And from there, somebody from our staff will 100% follow back up with you, because we're building the We Are the People movement now. We're not trying to wait till November 5th, 2024. We're organizing across all the states with our ambassadors, our ministers, our teachers, counselors, all throughout the states. We're implementing this blueprint today. Right now we have about 13 states that's on board with us. And so we, you know, just reach out to me. Andy at awj2024.com is my email. It's Andy at awj2024.com. And the website is www.awj2024.com. Take me. Vision for America, a new government. A government by the people, for the people, because we are the people.
And we will have Andy Williams Jr. and his vice presidential campaign, Rita Williams, non-related, both with the same last name, but Andy Williams Jr., presidential candidate, and also Rita Williams, vice presidential candidate, on with us again next Tuesday, and they will be on every Tuesday from now until probably the end of the year, on every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I hope everyone will join in and listen. Call in, ask questions, contribute in any way you can. We have somebody that's making a big, big move, which has never been done before, and that is to run for a presidential campaign, We the People, a new party, We the People Party, not We the People Republicans or We the People Democrats who are at one another's throats, but we have somebody that is really trying to make a difference. And if we join together, unite together, world, nationwide, then we will be having We the People Party, where we'll have more say, more representation, and we'll be a lot better off. So please join us next Tuesday. Andy, I want to thank you again for coming on. You're unique. You're very unique, and I think the higher power is with you. And I thank you for coming on these Tuesdays to educate us on what your plans are, what you're working on, and hopefully we'll be able to have somebody decent next November 5th, 2024. Thank you so much for coming on.
We will. Thank you. Thank you.
And audience, we are now going to end this episode. Again, Andy Williams, you can find him on www.andywilliamsjr.com as well. So please join us next Tuesday as we interview the new presidential candidate, Andy Williams Jr. Thank you so much. And we are now ending this episode. Thanks again, Andy.
Thank you.